Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. John Ivanko and Lisa Kivirist are recapturing our nation's roots of independence, self-sufficiency, and frugality at their farmhouse bed and breakfast in Greene County, Wisconsin. John and Lisa share how you, too, can become a farmstead chef. And Dickie Brennan could be described as a farmstead restaurateur. After decades of pursuit, he's taken the locavore effort to a whole new level with locally raised ducks. We've got a whole lot of quacking and crowing going on in this week's Louisiana Eats. John Ivanko and Lisa Kivirist are self-described farmstead chefs who have just published a new book by the same name. John and Lisa kissed their life in corporate America goodbye, and at 30 they began farming their beloved Green Acres in Greene County, Wisconsin. Joining us from the Green Acres are John and Lisa. Welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Hey, hi Poppy.
Hey, thanks much.
How would you all describe the life of a farmstead chef?
Well, that's a great question, because what it is not is something that requires degrees or a lot of gourmet gear. We love our kitchen, as you do, and when that love of food and cooking with fresh local ingredients really comes through, anybody can be a farmstead chef, whether you're on a farm like we are in a rural area, or an urban rooftop garden, or a suburban area shopping at the farmers market. There's increasing opportunities for us to connect with our food source and get back in our kitchen.
Your farm is completely powered by the wind and sun. Would you explain how that works?
Sure. Yeah, Poppy. We started about 9 years ago with a small photovoltaic system or PV system, taking that sunlight that does a wonderful job in growing our fruits, vegetables, and herbs and actually use it to make some electricity. About a year later, we added a 10 kW Berge wind turbine, so taking advantage of the wind that's going through our property to produce about 10,000 kilowatt hours a year, which is more than enough to power our farm. So we actually feed that back into the grid and get paid by our local utility company.
That's fantastic. I envy you that. That's great. I know that Lisa is the baker of the two of you, and I had never heard of a sun oven before. Lisa, could you tell us what's a sun oven and how does that work?
Sure. This is baking off grid at its finest. A sun oven is honestly exactly that. It's an oven that uses the energy of the sun to heat food. So it's a basic prop-up oven we put outside. You don't have to plug it in. All you need is sunlight and let it sit there for about 20 minutes, and it'll heat up to typically about 300, 350 degrees, just like your home oven. And it's wonderful. When our guests come to our bed and breakfast here on our farm, they can smell breads or pies or muffins literally wafting as they walk out the door and up the driveway. And no cost at all, no energy required, no bills to pay. It's just Mother Nature cooking up those goodies.
One of the fascinating features of your book, Farmstead Chef, to me, were the sections entitled Kitchen Table Talk. Would you explain why y'all felt those philosophical points of view needed inclusion in the book?
Sure. To us, cooking is very much a community-driven effort, and we love to share our food for us literally around our B&B table, but with friends and fellow farmers and anyone who walks in our door. So it was a natural fit for us to showcase these stories of nuggets from people around the country and what they are doing to change our food system. Some are growing our food as farmers. Some are cooking it into value-added products we can find in our stores, to educating about it, to creating nonprofits. There's so many different routes that people can take now, and we live in a time of really abundant opportunity for people to take charge of their food system and do those things. And so sharing those stories, we found, was a really accessible way to get people inspired.
Yeah, and the other aspect of that with all the recipes contributed by the different kitchen table talks is to really demonstrate what local can mean in different parts of the United States. And that's a big message that we try to hit on, is focusing on what is grown in our region and really create wonderful dishes around that. But if you happen to be in California, where avocados oftentimes are right in one's own community, if not in one's backyard, we have a dish there, the guacamole dip from a Chef Bryant Terry, to kind of incorporate and give some folks some ideas and flavors of how to incorporate those in.
Well, it made for a very interesting read. I have to say, Farmstead Chef is a lot more than just a cookbook. And I know everybody is pretty familiar with the 100-mile diet, or the idea of eating local by restricting how far away your food comes from, but what's the 100-foot diet?
We eat here where it's just 100 feet from our back door to our backyard garden. And we're not the only ones who are lowering those food miles when we see the abundance of home gardeners increasing and people who have the herbs right out their back door, or maybe some tomatoes in a container. We can get much closer to our food source, literally, when we start growing our own. And it's a very engaging process. Every year the garden gifts us with different things when we adapt our recipes accordingly. And that's very much a theme of Farmstead Chef, too, of using what you have and substituting when you don't, and enjoying, importantly, real food. We come from Wisconsin, so we need to get a good Wisconsin dairy plug in there. But when we talk about that, it's the real cream, the real cheese, and enjoying and savoring those flavors and eating what we like to call Farmsteadtarian, which basically means being on a first basis with your farmer. And it's real easy to do with cheese here in Wisconsin, of knowing our cheesemaker and knowing where our food directly comes from.
And you include some words for budding foragers or freegans. Can you explain that and share your thoughts on foraging and the freegans?
One of the kitchen table talks we feature is Phil and Judy Wealthy, and the focus is largely on their sugar shack operations, where they're going in and harvesting these wild foods or these wild ingredients, in this case maple syrup, and creating a whole livelihood around that. But the story also includes a mention of when they used to go foraging on the roadside for all sorts of things that they would then cook up into other meals during the course of the day. And so there's a huge resurgence of that aspect, whether it's more people hunting, looking at eating the whole animal, but also folks in the city looking at taking advantage of this incredible waste stream that exists and trying to build relationships with different stores in the area and then tapping into that. So the freegan movement is all about, if you will, raiding dumpsters, although it goes into also growing produce on your rooftop or in a container on your patio. So it touches on a lot of different aspects, but it's using what's there all along that oftentimes is overlooked.
Speaking about economy, the news has focused a lot lately on the cost and the real sustainability of organic eating. But you all have some organic advice for us, don't you?
It's interesting how that price tag label is always assumed to be part of eating organic. And what we strive to do in Farmstead Chef is provide folks with alternatives. For example, making a lot of your own pantry staples. We have recipes for everything from hot cocoa mix to pastry dough, and things you'd normally go out to the supermarket and buy off the shelf in a box, you can make your own. And when you do that, you can increase the quality of ingredients using, as we do, organic flour or butter. And there's a tremendous cost savings with that. But what we're talking about fundamentally is taking ownership of your food. And rather than just accepting the options that the corporate ag companies give us on those shelves, to say, I'm going to do my own and make my own and know my farmer. And that's a real positive, important message, I think, especially in today's economy where it's always doom and gloom and you need more money to buy more stuff. There's a lot of advantages in looking into our own pantries and our own kitchens in creating our own solutions.
Yeah, a big part of our message, Poppy, is really that there's an incredible abundance in nature, and we're really overlooking that abundance. Money does grow on trees. It comes in the form up here of pears, and in California it might be avocados. And so often there's even these fruits or vegetable trees and so forth in communities that folks just kind of walk by and see it's overloaded with fruit, and they just keep walking by. Well, a growing number of people are introducing themselves maybe to someone they don't know and beginning to see if they might be able to harvest those Meyer lemons off that Meyer lemon tree. And suddenly, you know, a pile show up a week later after they turn it into something magnificent in the kitchen. And it's reconnecting and reinstilling some of these connections with food and really taking advantage of that abundance.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. That sounds like so much fun, and it's been really fun having this catch-up with you.
Hey, come visit us in Wisconsin.
Thanks so much, Poppy.
Farmstead chefs John Ivankoe and Lisa Kiveris.
Country living lately. Country living, you're on my mind all the time now. Country living, baby. Country living, this suits you fine, baby. It suits you fine.
Now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The answer to this week's question, what was the name given to vegetable gardens that helped feed America during World War II, is the Victory Garden. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Victory Gardens have helped unite communities across America since World War II, and they're still doing so today. We had a record-breaking number of listeners participate in this week's quiz, with entries coming in from Wisconsin, Vermont, and South Carolina. But as luck would have it, our winner hails from Louisiana. Congratulations to Lewis Hill of River Ridge, you've won this week's culinary contest. Send us your response for a chance to win.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what is the name of Corey Brown's online food publication? Here's a hint. It's named for a common kitchen implement used on citrus. Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what is the name of Corey Brown's online food publication? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Dickie Brennan's name is synonymous with some of Louisiana's finest foods through his success as a restaurateur. But it may surprise you to learn of Dickie's efforts to ensure that the food served in his namesake establishments is as local as possible. Dickie, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Poppy, it's so good to be with you, and thank you for that kind words.
Okay, tell me, when did the eat local bug bite you?
You know, I grew up 2 blocks from Commander's, so I'm thinking back in the 70s, Paul Prudhomme was our chef, and we had people like Alice Waters coming to visit, wanting to know where you're getting this great product. And I guess what happened in Commander's, we had European chefs for so many generations, and all of a sudden we have this Louisiana guy. Not only was Louisiana, but he grew up in the country. So all the people he knew were farmers, fishermen. And Dad and Aunt Ella kept saying, you know, we want great products. We want great products. We want those regional products. We want American products. And Paul was able to help source them. So, you know, we just started finding people saying, you used to do this, why don't you do it again? That's how far back I go with regional sourcing.
That's fantastic. I love it when you tell me about working at Commander's, coming home from high school and going to work over there in the kitchen.
Well, I was exposed to all those things, but I'd be teased because I'd go eat 2 baby veal Lafayette specials within about 3 minutes.
So you were the most expensive employee they had.
Absolutely.
Well, you've long been a champion of the local farmer and fisher. I would like you to tell us about some of the relationships that your restaurant has forged with our local purveyors.
Golly, it's family people. Recently, we've had great success on the North Shore up around Hammond in the Robert area. A guy by the name of Sandy Sharp. Sandy's a pioneer. He's doing things different than what I've experienced since the 70s. You know, a lot of times you would approach a multi-generational farmer who had taken other opportunities where they're working in other industries because they can't survive farming. I mean, we were literally wiped out years ago with California and Florida doing mass agriculture. So he's jumped in and has some great resources that are enabling him to be successful.
Well, fruit and vegetables, and certainly Louisiana seafood, is increasingly available in local dining establishments. You see this all the time. But what I really want to hear about is your duck obsession. And yeah. I know it's not a new obsession. So when did that begin?
We've always served duck in our restaurants. So I've always enjoyed eating ducks. And when I eat in other restaurants, if duck's on the menu, I tend to want to try the duck dish. But of all the years that we've served duck in Louisiana, you know, it's a product that comes from Long Island. It's a Long Island duckling. It's a domestic duck. And we always fight to try to get them to send them to us fresh, and they typically want to send them frozen. It's just a big commodity product. So with people like Sandy, we just started talking. And I actually teased him. I said, I'm tickled you're having success being a farmer. These vegetables are wonderful, but a real farmer's going to bring us some livestock. And challenged him there, got him thinking about it. And he has successfully started this operation. These birds, they really can't survive on their own. But after about 3 weeks, they are brought out into pastures. And they are in a totally natural environment. And they're free range. They're running around. It's an exciting thing to see. But so we have this natural raised duck right here in Louisiana. It's the first time I've ever had something that is fresh, that is raised, served in our restaurants. I drive to the field. I'm talking to the farmer. I'm looking at the product that I get to sell to my customers. That's huge.
So this is a really new project. I mean, have the first birds arrived at the restaurant yet?
We have maybe 5 weeks. We're certainly telling the customer that comes in because it's so new. We have it, and John Besh, who's worked a lot with us, his group and our group have introduced them, and hopefully
fantastic.
It'll be available to all the different chefs in town who are all excited about it.
I bet they are. And, Dickie, so, you know, that's the thing about you. You're so generous of spirit. Somebody who had a lifelong dream about having fresh ducks might want to corner the market, but you're sharing it with everybody, and that's the way you are.
Oh, Poppy. Well, that's my dad. I can't help it.
Well, now that we know the ducks have hit the restaurant, what are you cooking up with them?
Oh, fun. The fun part. It's a dream, you know, to be able to introduce a product that I guess for generations, the only thing that's been available, as many duck dishes as we have in this city, is a product that comes from out of state. It's a big commodity. So to be able to get in a car, drive an hour, see these wonderful ducks in a pasture, naturally raised, that are available now for chefs in New Orleans. Pretty exciting.
Oh, I bet you're serving some delicious stuff. So give me an example.
Now, we have duck everywhere. We really believe in supporting our farmer. So, I mean, from gumbos, we're doing a lot of confit.
Ah, and for those who don't know, confit is a really ancient French method of cooking mostly the thigh and the leg in its own fat, so it's sort of unctuously falling off the bone and delicious, huh?
It really is preserved duck, and it's a process used to where they would cook it in its own oil, and then after you finish the cooking process, as it cooled down, the meat would be preserved in the oil, and it would give it an age, you know, shelf life.
Yes.
And back before refrigeration. But that process of cooking in its own oils and storing it in oils, and when you pull it out and you bring it back, it's very savory.
Very savory and really delicious. And luckily, since we don't have to worry about keeping it in a crock in the corner anymore, it doesn't have to be as salty as it used to be.
This is true.
Now, before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to talk about the newest restaurant that you're going to be bringing on board. So tell us, how are things coming at the new location at Le Petit Theater?
First of all, to be able to be right next to the oldest community theater in America. Le Petit is an incredible historic theater. They're doing some restoration. There's going to be 300, 350 seats, very intimate. The theater should be better than ever. The board is so excited. All the energies get to go into the theater. Our energy is getting to go into the other part of the property, and we're just starting the demolition phase. We have the permits, and we will go into construction with the hopes of being able to bring the theater, as well as Tableau, which is going to be the name, Tableau at Le Petit Theater, on by the end of the year.
That is such exciting news. Thanks for sharing that scoop with us, and thank you so much for coming to talk duck with us on Louisiana Eats.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Inspirational New Orleans restaurateur, Dickie Brennan. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we celebrate our 100th episode with a visit to a secret rooftop garden.
This was an idea that we found maybe 6 months ago, so it's a quick project for us. It's a vertical aeroponic system, and what that means is the produce is growing up, and there is no soil. And it's using only a tenth of the water that soil plants would use. The plants grow twice as fast, maybe a little bit more than that. This was the perfect idea and a perfect spot to launch a rooftop garden or farm even.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe and the Bourbon House, Lights Egan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WW.